So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I thought we'd talk about rapport.
Okay.
And, you know, we haven't even got an English word for it.
It's a French word. What is that? Some kind of implication?
I don't know. I think it must mean that the French place more emphasis on it than English-speaking countries. I don't know. I'm not going to go there anyway.
Let's not go into that.
But rapport is kind of the basis of trust. And a lot of people think that you either have rapport or you don't. They'll say, oh, yeah, I really click with so-and-so. It's like, you know, I've met this person and it seems like we've known each other all our lives.
Or they say good chemistry.
Yeah, good chemistry. Or they'll say the opposite, like, oh, you know, I know that person, I've known them for years, but, you know, somehow we don't connect really very well at all.
Yeah.
So it usually means that there isn't a level of rapport there. And so because we kind of think that we've either got it or we haven't got it with somebody and other people we do have it with, we don't bother to find out what rapport actually is. And so the people that were developing NLP in the mid-70s, they, you know, studied, they call it modelling, studied some people who were getting really good results in terms of helping people to change and tried to figure out what they were doing.
And so there might be people with the same qualifications or something, but getting different results.
Yeah, they were different. So one was Virginia Satir, who was a family therapist, and the other one was Milton Erickson, who was a family doctor and also a psychiatrist. Yeah. And so they were looking at them initially just to figure out what they were doing. Because the other thing that happens is that when people, like a lot of us build rapport naturally, you'll understand when I tell you a bit more about it, we just do it naturally with people that we tend to like. But if we don't like them for some reason, or maybe they say something or do something and we think, oh, I don't like that person, then we get out of rapport with those people. And so then we're not open to being influenced. So they found that when people had this level of rapport, first of all, it builds trust. And secondly, that people are more easily influenced when you have rapport. Now, that's going to sound immediately like, oh, well, it's a good way to manipulate people.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not what it's about at all, because it's the intention behind it. So when people are genuinely in rapport, they're influencing each other. They're open to listening to another person's point of view. You're open to listening to their point of view. You might not agree with it, but at least you're open to listening to it. When we're not open to listening to it, then we get out of rapport. So the idea is that by building rapport, we're able to get to a deeper level of conversation with people to influence each other where that's appropriate, or to at least understand the other person's point of view. That's basically it. And so if you haven't got that as a basis for trust, you know, how are you going to coach somebody, for example? How are you going to get their point of view, get them to understand your point of view, any of these things? So it's one of the first things that I teach on NLP training courses, because a lot of the communication we have is not only with ourselves, because we can get out of rapport with ourselves as well.
Okay.
But yeah, we can, but I'll tell you about that later.
Okay, all right.
But we can get out of rapport with other people. And if we get out of rapport with people, then we're not in a position to do anything that's of any use. So a lot of people think that it's natural. In fact, it is natural for a lot of people. A lot of the people that come on my courses, I'd say probably 95% of them already have good rapport skills, but they just don't know that they have good rapport skills because they do it naturally.
Is that kind of a self-selecting group? They're interested in...
They're interested in people.
They're interested in people
and they want to, you know, develop their own skills in helping people or changing people or getting along better with people so they can get the most out of them, how to motivate them better, all those kind of things.
So where are the people you really need to get to teach this?
Well, they usually, sometimes they're the 5%. They usually, and these people are, might be engineers or accountants. I mean, that's a very global view. But using the example of engineers, for example, is often they might be senior engineers and they've.
But you've had experience with this, right?
I have, that's right. So I can give you some examples of that where they, you know, they've been working with junior engineers and they just say, oh, do this, do that, do the other thing, and the engineers just do it because they're the senior engineer and they've got more experience. But then they might get put in charge of a whole lot of people who aren't engineers, and they go, well, why should I do that? you know, well, I think there's a better way of doing this, and the senior engineers just know how to cope with that because nobody's really challenged them before.
Yeah. So, and it might not even be really a big challenge. It might just be someone communicating.
Yeah, it might just be, well, we're building these roads here. We've been doing this for 25 years. You know, this is what we think. They feel kind of challenged by that, and they get out of rapport, and so they need to learn skills to get in rapport so that they can listen to what the other people have got to say as well as just having their own point of view, you know.
That's a really interesting dynamic. That's the consultant coming out of the office, going onto the building site.
That's
where
the one.
The guys are getting the work. I've been in that, not as an engineer, but coming out of architect's office, coming onto site.
Yeah.
And that there's so many different dynamics going on there.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, there's the whole white-collar, blue-collar thing going on.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people... Is it harder to get into rapport when you're feeling wary in the situation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That would make it bad, wouldn't it?
Because what happens then is your body language, it shows in your body language.
You've got to cross your arms and stand back a little bit. And
turn away, lean back.
You talk to the sky rather than the person.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I use the example of an engineer, but your example's even better because that's exactly what happens. And those people might be perfectly okay and in rapport with another engineer on the same level or outside of work completely because they're not being challenged.
So there's the thing, I can tell when I meet someone who works in kind of those office situations, like consultancy, that sort of thing, there's you can just tell by the vibe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, immediately.
Because you've got good people skills, and so, you know, you pick up that vibe, as you say. But
it's familiar to me too, because I worked like that for 5 years.
Right.
So, yeah.
And now you're understanding why. It's interesting because the people that, when they learn these skills, because they think it's a vibe or a, you know, it's some kind of hocus-pocus thing, they go, well, you know, you can't learn it. Well, you can learn it because they've found out that there is a structure to it. And once these people understand the structure, it's like they're away, they're brilliant, because they go, oh, I've got something I can hang my hat on now. It's like there's a process, right? And once I understand that, it all makes sense. And so although, as I said, 95% of the people already build rapport really well, sometimes they might not be in rapport with somebody, not because they're not trying, but because maybe the other person's got the wrong end of the stick or they've got somebody's told them something about them before they get there. And and then they don't know then what to do to get in rapport. Or they need to get out of rapport with somebody and they don't know how to break rapport because they've never learned it, you know?
So maybe if you've got a sophisticated salesperson come to see you and they get you into rapport and then you're in trouble.
And then they're in trouble and they're like, how do I get rid of this person? Because often they don't want to break rapport because I think it's because they sense that it's the person will be impolite. It's impolite,
yeah.
In fact, when I ask them to do some of the exercises they do, they really struggle because I think it's impolite to do it.
So what do you do to get out? Well, actually, we haven't talked about how to get into rapport.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to get in rapport. And the other thing is rapport is different from friendship. So you can be in rapport with somebody and have never met them before, not have a deep friendship. You can have a really deep friendship with somebody and have a different level of rapport. Like, you know, you could be in the kitchen and your friend could be in the lounge and you're shouting abuse at each other because that's how you build rapport with each other. You know? Some people are like that, you know.
Yeah.
Or they'll be sarcastic with one another. But it's like you wouldn't do that with somebody that you haven't met, but you can do it with somebody that you know really, really well because they understand you.
Yeah.
And you understand them, and then it's okay. But you don't do it with people that you haven't met before because they take it the wrong way.
Mm.
So different levels of it. So basically rapport is fundamental to every interaction that we have. And there's different kind of levels. So the first level is clothing.
Oh, yeah,
sounds
right.
A bit weird, right? So just to give you an example, let's say you were going for a job interview in an accountant's office. And so, you know, if you went for the interview, maybe wearing ripped jeans and scruffy shoes and a T-shirt you'd had on for a couple of days, you know, that would not build rapport with that kind of professional environment. Yeah. But however, if you're going for a job in some kind of creative space, then that might be exactly what you want. If you wore a suit to the creative place, then they'd be going, oh, this person's a bit kind of stage, you know, maybe.
Yeah,
you know, maybe, yeah.
For us.
And so the other aspect of clothing is when we have teams, you'd know this from a football team, you all dress the same.
Yeah.
So already you've got a level of rapport with the people in the team because you're all dressed the same. People that are dressed differently, they're on the other team, right?
Yep, that's the opposition.
You're going to a bank, they're dressed the same. You know, so places like that have uniforms so that people have a level of rapport with each other as well. So then the next level is behaviour, and the first one is non-verbal language. So we often think about language as being a way of getting rapport, and it is. But even the breathing pattern of somebody can help us build rapport. Yeah, so it's interesting that, you know, if somebody's feeling really hyped up, their breathing pattern will be faster. And if you're in rapport with them, your breathing pattern will become faster as well, the longer you sit with them.
Right.
Unless you do something to change your breathing pattern, and then you can help them to control their breathing pattern right. by being in rapport. So, eye contact. So, you know, some people go, oh, you know, you can't trust people if they don't give you look you straight in the eye. But that's not true. We have to look away to get information. And so I say to people, give people about as much eye contact as they give you, you know. But staring at somebody for 2 minutes while you're talking to them is quite disconcerting, you know.
And there's different expectations in different cultures.
That's right.
Even yeah. like I got told when I went to London, don't look people in the eye. The only people who look you in the eye are crazy people.
Right.
Like in New Zealand, you're walking down the street, you just kind of you look at the person going past yeah. you and you look them in the eye briefly yeah. as they go past. But, yeah, apparently you don't.
Yeah, you don't and, keep and looking noticed, at them as they're going past. The
well, with that, yeah, but in London, that's
yeah
doesn't happen so much.
No, and in some and of the islands, do, it's quite rude to be looking people in the eye as well. You know, looking down is more humble. That's another thing to take into account is that
depends
other people have different cultures. You know, is different.
Yeah. yeah.
Then we've got posture and gesture. So. You know, when people talk like you're just talking, you're moving your hands. People move their hands, they move their head, you know, they move the whole body sometimes, depending on how excited they get about what they're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can match some of that. You can reflect that back to them by doing the same kind of gestures, not at the same time, but when you reflect, you could use the same hand movements, for example. Head tilt. So sometimes people put their head on one side. And, you know, I've noticed when I do it in a course and I'll go, oh, some people put their head and half the people in the room will put their head on the same side just as I'm talking about it because they're doing it automatically.
So you know you've got the audience.
Well, yeah, but then I point it out to them because they go, oh, I didn't notice, you know.
And then they all straighten their heads.
They'll straighten their head up, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the angle of the spine. So I often sit the same way as somebody else. So if the person's sitting on an angle, like you're sitting on a slight angle, so I could sit on a slight angle. I could sit straight up. You can notice the angle of the person's spine. And then, you know, they'll might use hand and finger gestures. So I get them to do an exercise on the course where they have to find five things in common. And so often the people will be standing there and they'll have like the left hand will be holding two fingers because they've found two things, right? And they both have got standing the same way. Well, then they've got three now, so they're holding three fingers, right? And this is really interesting. So obviously different finger gestures will get you out of rapport.
There's certain ones that really will.
Certain ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have things like the thumbs up, you know, that's good, thank you, without saying anything. So yeah. There's gestures like that. And what we do with nonverbal language is we can match and mirror that body language. So matching is where, let's say, the person's got their left leg over the right leg. So if I was going to match that, I'd have my left leg over my right leg and I'd be matching that. But more powerful than that is mirroring. So that right. is where you look like a mirror image of the person. So if the yeah. person's got the left leg over the right leg, you'd have your right leg over your left leg so that you look like a mirror image. And it's kind of saying to the person, I'm like you. And so the thing behind rapport is that we like people who are like us. So by making yourself look like the other person, you're saying, I'm like you. And we like people who are like us. So, you know, people don't have to believe this, by the way. You can just go out and look and watch people.
Yeah.
Just go to a restaurant and notice people sitting in a restaurant and notice that, you know, one might lift the drink and then the other one lifts the drink at the same time. Or one has a gesture and the other one does. So that they're in this kind of a dance where one person's doing something and the other person's doing it. go somewhere where there's no tables, where people are just sitting and notice, can notice who's in rapport and who's not in rapport. You know, and often I'll see when I'm training, you know, I'm looking at the whole group, even though I might be looking at one person, I can see the whole group. And I can see if one person says something, I can see somebody across the other side of the room get out of rapport because they don't agree with it.
And do they physically change the way they're sitting?
They often turn slightly to the left, or they might fold their arms or look down.
Yeah, that's a fairly clear one, the folding the arms thing.
And then I might go, oh, what do you think about that? And then they're like on the back foot a bit. But then they got an opportunity to say what they think and then see what happens with that.
So you can use that to get the debate going. Like, that's the person I want to talk to next.
Yeah, because often people won't say something in a setting like that unless they're specifically asked as well.
Yeah, well, that's what the folding the arms thing is too. It's like,
Shutting off from this now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what happens then is if you imagine talking to just one person and you say something and they fold their arms, then that tells you that probably they've disagreed with something that you've said. So you might think to yourself, what did I say there? Or, you know, what do you think about what I've said? Because it's giving you an indication that then that they are not liking what they're hearing for some reason. So it might be that they've misinterpreted what you've said, or it might be that they completely understand what you say and they don't agree with it. And so that's an opportunity then for you to listen to what their point of view is. So this isn't about manipulation. This is about being influenced both ways, because if you don't listen to other people, how are you ever going to be influenced about anything? You just have your own point of view for the rest of your life and nothing ever changes and nobody talks to you in the end, right?
Well, yes, we can think of people in that situation.
So there's matching and mirroring. Then there's voice. So we can match the speed of somebody's voice. So I know I took quite quickly. I keep intending to slow it down. I'll slow it down now.
Yeah, but you'll forget in a few, in about 30 seconds, it'll be gone. Especially if I talk really fast as well.
Exactly. But if you were talking to somebody that talked really slow, the natural tendency is to slow your voice down a little bit as well. Or if you were talking to somebody that where English wasn't their first language, you might slow it down a bit as well. The volume of speech. So the tendency is to lower your volume if you're talking to somebody who's quite softly spoken, and to be a bit more vociferous, it's a good word, isn't it, if the person's got a louder voice as well.
Yeah.
And then the tone and rhythm. The tone and rhythm of voice. So this is where people sometimes can mimic somebody's accent. So, that, and usually, you know, like for me, they do it really badly and that gets me out of rapport. Because I go, nah, don't sound like that.
Yeah. What are you doing?
So, because mimicking is a different intention. So mirroring, the intention is to build rapport and to get along with somebody.
Yeah.
Mimicking, the intention is to make fun of somebody. So a completely different intention.
Oh, okay. But you'd be in danger if someone now went out to try to build rapport, they might end up mimicking by accident because they're not...
No, just don't copy their accent. Is that
the main thing?
Yeah, it's an accent thing usually. Or it might be some idiom that they've got in their speech.
Yeah, if you do something really obvious, people are going to go, what the hell?
That's right. That thing of, oh, you know, what Darren did is just kind of withdrew and went, oh, that's a bit weird kind of thing. Yeah, so that's getting out of rapport then, you see. And then we've got language that we use. So we can use the key words back that people use. So often when they're talking, they'll use words that they put a bit more emphasis on, like, oh, God, we had a fantastic day yesterday. And you can say, oh, yeah, fantastic day yesterday. And they'll go, yeah, and they'll carry on talking because that word had some meaning for them. It's a key word for them. Or they might say, oh, you know, it's really important that I'll be able to trust my friends. That's really key for me. And you go, oh, so trust, that's really important to you. I go, yeah, because that's a value word, so they put emphasis on it. Then sharing common experiences. So that's what we do anyway. So, you know, you say, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm just from blah, blah, blah in Raglan. Oh, okay. And, you know, you build rapport on, for example, I've got a dog, so people will talk about their dogs, you know, and you build rapport on that. Oh, where are you from? How long are you here for? Oh, I used to live there. So we're always trying to find little connections with people. And that's if you want to build rapport with them. you know, there's always something, especially in New Zealand. They say, like, it's 2 degrees of separation, don't you?
Six, totally.
Everywhere else in the world, but two in New Zealand.
Yes.
So it doesn't take very much of a conversation to find some connection with the person that you're talking to. And then you can build rapport with people's capabilities, like talked about football teams.
Yeah,
you know, they have teammates. It could be colleagues at work. It could be sporting competitors. So even though people are competing with each other, they've still got a level of rapport because they're sharing the same sport. You know,
yeah,
your
shared
teams,
experience.
Shared
yeah.
experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
And mutual respect for other people's capabilities. And then the other one is beliefs and values. So this is about respecting what other people believe and value, and not necessarily that you have to agree with them, because they might have different values to you, but that's okay. It's okay. They don't try and change your values, but it's like understanding where that value comes from, and might be important that you've got different maps. If we all had a group think, then we'd all be just cyborgs, wouldn't we? You know,
yeah,
wouldn't
yeah.
be much fun. So those are the main things, and these these things are for a lot of people, they just happen automatically. But what I'm teaching them is how they do it naturally, so that when they are in a situation where they might feel that they don't have a rapport with somebody, they know what to do to get in rapport. And what I've found is in situations like that, it doesn't happen very often, that the more that I can build rapport with a person, the more I find that I can like about the person. There was a guy, Dr. Robert somebody, he used to do a lot of programs for the BBC, and one of the processes that he had was he had his hand and his head wired up to some electromagnetic thing, and they showed him on a screen a hand coming out and grabbing a ball, right? And even though he was sitting there with his hand still, his hand was still making movements as if he was going to grab the ball, because he was in rapport with this hand that he could see, right? So, as I say, it's kind of wired in, and they've called it actually the mirror neuron, which is interesting. Found it about 10, 12 years ago, I think.
And I guess this is something like autistic people, this is something they don't seem to have.
Yeah, so what they often do then is try and copy what the people do, but it's kind of, they're kind of exaggerated, and it doesn't come across as being quite natural, you know.
And it's even worse.
Yeah.
Probably than...
So it's interesting that they called it the mirror neuron, though, because that was, you know, this was in 75 that NLP came out. They found that people were doing this naturally, and that this is one of the things that built rapport. And so then when you've got rapport with somebody, if you're a coach, for example, you want to make sure that you have that rapport first before you try and coach them into wherever they want
yeah,
to go.
Yeah, and that can be hard. Sometimes some people feel hard to reach, hard to connect with,
yeah,
and therefore you're hard to coach.
Yeah.
So if you come into it, say you've come in here, I mean, we've done lots of interviews together, so we kind of know each other in this context.
Yeah.
But the first time you came in for an interview, were you like consciously looking to see how the rapport was going?
No.
You weren't worried?
No, and this is the thing, is the only time I worry is when I'm not in rapport.
Right, okay. And yeah. Then what might you have done?
Well, I would have done all the things that I've
You've
talked
done all those things, okay.
So, and that's what I teach the people on the course, is like I tell them that you already know how to do this, but you know about it unconsciously, which means you don't have a choice as to whether you're in rapport or not.
Mm.
So, again, if you've got some salesman on your doorstep when you're just trying to cook tea and you need to get out of rapport but you think it's impolite, then you're not going to get out of rapport because you don't know how.
Yeah.
But if you know how, which could be like looking at your watch or shutting the door. No, no, that's just an example.
Say goodbye.
Yeah. Or, you know, so finding some way to break rapport, then you won't know what to do. So it gives them a choice then. You can either be in rapport or not. And that you don't need to worry about it unless you are not in rapport. Now you know what to do to get that rapport back again, so that you can, you know, start listening to the other person and getting their feedback, and you can influence each other if that's what happens. Which, you know, every conversation we have is an influence in some way.
Mm. And it's really important for interviews to have a connection. And I find the ones I find harder on the phone.
Right.
And there's a delay in the phone system.
Right.
And it's fine for saying, hello, how are you, I'm good, what time are we meeting, like that. But if it's someone you don't know and you're trying to get a rapport going for the interview, I find it can be quite hard work.
Right.
You're kind of trying to force it and you can't force it. Because it's just this little delay. Obviously, you're not getting body language because you can't see each other, but you're still picking up there's cues, I guess, from breathing and hesitations and pauses and all that sort of stuff.
Well, the words that they're using as well. So that's the thing when you're on the phone, you haven't got the visuals at all, which makes it, which is why I don't teach NLP online or on the phone. I teach it face-to-face.
But
you have got the auditory aspect. So if the person's very softly spoken, you might alter your tone. If they're hesitant, you might question that in some way to see if they're okay. If they're using particular words that they're putting emphasis on, then you might re-emphasise those words to build rapport. So it depends what you've got available. So you have to use what you've got available. And because you were quite visual, you would kind of depend on the visual aspects of rapport.
Yeah, but it's the little half-second delay that I find makes it really
Well, it
difficult.
Interrupts rapport, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a natural flow then because there's some artificial thing in the middle causing this delay.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we'll be talking to Stephanie Filt with our Inside Your Mind segment. Stephanie, is there somewhere people can go and read a little bit more about this if they've suddenly become interested?
Yeah, actually, there's two things. One is I'm doing a free webinar on Wednesday evening, and I'm just trying to think how they can get access to it. So I have to register. Probably if they're interested, can I give them my phone number, my text, and they can text me?
Yeah, of course.
You can text me on 021-684-395. So that's 021-684-395, and I can send you the link to register. It's just free. It's about an hour and a half, and it's called 8 Ways to Unleash Your Super Self.
Okay. Or people can find you through your website, Inside Your Mind.
Go to the website, insideyourmind.com, and send me a message through there.
Okay.
And I'll send them the link. Yeah.
There was another way, it's another thing, that, something they can read, just casually? Or just Google it?
If you go onto the website as well, there is an article on there about rapport. Okay. If you just put in rapport in the search, it'll come up with the articles that are about rapport.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for coming in, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, folks, we're going to have a quick break, and then Robs will be in here up to the microphone talking Nature Connection.